Only a Game is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
In Chalked Up, subtitled Inside Elite Gymnastics, Merciless Coaching, Overzealous Parents, Eating Disorders, and Elusive Olympic Dreams, there are some photographs of the author, former gymnastics champion Jennifer Say. In the photographs presenting Jennifer as a grown-up, she looks very happy, and this is encouraging because as an elite gymnast, she was often hungry, injured, and miserable. Like lots of children, Jennifer Say initially got involved with gymnastics for the exercise and for the fun. When we had the opportunity to talk about her book this week, I began by asking Jennifer how old she was when the sport became something other than exercise and fun.
It escalated fairly quickly into a very competitive outlet for me, but it was still fun. I mean, I'm a competitive person. I was then and I am now. So that didn't really take the fun out of it. But I would say by the time I was 8 years old, and I started when I was six, but by the time I was eight, I was competing. So it was already fairly serious. I still had a great time doing it. And I would say, and I think this is pretty obvious in the book, that it doesn't become a true sort of Herculean battle that isn't fun at all or rewarding at all until the very end of my career.
When you say it started to get serious when you were eight, quantify that for me. How much time per week does a competitive 8 or 9 year old spend in the gym?
Well, by the time I was eight, I was working out 3 or 4 days a week, depending on whether or not I had a competition coming up, for about 3 or 4 hours a day, which is a lot. You know, I was on the local club team, so every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday after school, I was there from after school until dinner time. And, you know, I have a 7-year-old, and I can't really imagine him doing anything for that stretch of time. And as a parent, I can't really imagine carting him around quite that much at this point in his life. But that's what we did.
A great deal of what's in the book is pretty negative. You write, for example, that you don't remember fourth grade, but you do remember preparing for the state gymnastics championships. Do you feel that somebody, one of your parents, a teacher, maybe a former coach who had dropped out of the gymnastics world, should have suggested different priorities at that point?
Well, I think the thing is, and I've talked to my parents at great length since then, and I even actually recently ran into a teacher of mine from 4th, 5th, and 6th grade, and they did all talk about it, but the fact was I performed in school. I had friends. They were largely in the gym and not at school. My best friends were in the gym because that's where I spent a lot of my time, and I think if they had seen my grades dropping or if they had seen evidence that I wasn't a happy child, they probably would have switched things up a little bit for me, but none of that was true.
How old were you when you first started worrying about how much you weighed?
That came later for me. It wasn't until I went to a national training center in Pennsylvania. I was already competing at the elite level, which is the highest level in women's gymnastics, the level which qualifies you for the national team, world championships, things like that. But I had been in a gym between the ages of 10 and 14 that really didn't emphasize that. And, you know, the fact is we worked out 5, 6, 7 hours a day. I mean, we weren't fat, and I didn't really think about it very much. But when I switched gyms and went to this national training center, there was an incredible amount of emphasis placed on weight, and we were weighed in many times a week, oftentimes before and after practice. And it was at that point that I got a little, a lot compulsive about it. And I think it was sort of a perfect storm because it was also the point at which my body was likely fighting to mature, and I was kind of beating that back with a stick.
Wait, you had your dad was a doctor when you were growing up, and actually a parent of one of the other gymnasts came to him and said, hey, how do I stop my child from getting her period because her body's going to change? I don't want that to happen.
Yeah, it's true. And my dad, in his typical sarcastic way, told her to get her pregnant, which, you know, I think sent the message that what he was asking was ridiculous. And at that point in time, you know, I had no struggles with eating or with my body. I was quite young. I was about 12 years old, I think, more or less, when my dad relayed that story to me. But it was definitely, you know, that time in gymnastics in the 1980s, the aesthetic, the accepted body type was very, very lean. And I think a lot of the girls really struggled to maintain that body type. You know, when you're 17, 18 years old, it isn't normal to have 2 or 3% body fat. And the tactics that you employ to get there aren't very healthy.
Tell me about some of those tactics.
Well, I mean, the first thing you do is just restrict your eating. But after a while, that stops working. And when I say restrict your eating, I mean my sort of bar was no more than 500 calories a day. And I remember recording every single calorie in a diary, and I actually found some of those diaries when I was writing the book. Mm. You know, I'd write 1 calorie for a Diet Coke, 10 calories for a piece of chewing gum. So I really, really watched every single calorie, which seems so absurd to me now. But after a while, you know, that wasn't enough. And I employed other tactics like compulsive exercise outside of the gym. You know, obviously we were exercising a lot there, but on Sundays when we didn't have practice, I would put on a sweatsuit that made you sweat a whole lot and you know, aerobicize to Jane Fonda for hours on end. I used to spit in a cup to get rid of water weight. That was something I learned from the wrestlers in my high school. They all did that to make weigh in. And towards the end of my career, I abused laxatives. So, you know, I was sort of in that binge purge cycle, although I never really binged. A binge was a bowl of ice cream maybe on Saturday night.
You mentioned a moment ago that as the mother of a 7-year-old, you wouldn't want your schedule to be entirely determined by the future that your 7-year-old might have in gymnastics. By the time you were 10, you were working at gymnastics at least 5 days a week. What was the impact of that schedule on your family?
Well, my mother's life completely revolved around the gym. Every gym I ever attended, she ended up working there behind the desk, checking girls in. She was very involved in, you know, the parent booster club. My brother was also a gymnast. I'm not sure what other choice he had, as he kind of trailed along with her and with me. So he just started taking classes as well. So our family, my mother, my brother, and my life revolved around the gym. And my dad, you know, he held a job, so he worked to pay for all of it, essentially. And he was definitely very involved. I mean, my father attended most of my competitions, but I think his life didn't revolve around it. He had a job, he had friends, whereas my mother's entire life revolved around it. And I think at the end that made it very difficult because she felt she'd given so much to it. And she really wanted me to follow through on the dream that she had developed for me.
And the dream was, being a national champion, that wasn't the end of the dream, right?
No, it wasn't. I think the thing was, is we all started out with such good intentions. And I think I surprised myself at every point in time. You know, we didn't go into this when I was 6 years old thinking, I'm going to go to the Olympics. And there are girls that do start with that in mind. And, you know, I thought that was a neat idea because I admired Nadia, but I didn't know what that meant. And my parents were never pushy. But over the course of my career, I continued to exceed my own and their expectations. And once I won nationals in 1986, having also been in the top three the prior year, it all of a sudden seemed quite possible that I could indeed go to the Olympics in 88. Unfortunately, my body and my head to a certain extent fell apart towards the end of 87, and I ended up walking away from the sport, which is what caused the rift in our family, because at that point my mother felt she'd given so much.
In 1985, 1 year before you won the national championship, you were, and I'm quoting now from the book, reeling toward depression, out of control, disordered eating, and self-loathing. Do you think your experience at this point was and is representative of the experiences of other gymnasts?
I wouldn't necessarily want to imply or suggest that, you know, every other gymnast experiences this. I will say that I think competing at the highest level in any sport is an incredibly intense experience. It's very demanding on your body and your mind. Because in gymnastics, it's young girls oftentimes, that adds this whole other sort of set of circumstances. And I will say this as well. I have talked to many, many girls who I competed with who were in the highest levels of the sport at the same time that I was. And they have echoed almost everything that I've said in the book. There are those that say they didn't have that experience, and I think that's great. But I have talked to many who have. Mm. I do think it is much more likely at the elite level. You know, I don't think a level 8, as they call them today, generally has the same experience, which is a lower level, not at the national level. But it's really intense when you're trying to get that top spot. And I would dare say that many girls had the same experience.
You were the national champion in 1986, but there doesn't seem to be much in Chalked Up about celebrating. In fact, less than a year after winning that championship, you describe yourself as heavy with the weight of aging, failure, and being left behind. And you write that you thought about driving into oncoming traffic rather than going to the gym. What happened?
To understand what it took for me to win the 86 Nationals, you have to sort of start with the fact that less than a year before, I'd broken my femur at the World Championships, and the femur is the biggest bone in the human body. I broke my thigh bone. The amount of effort, both physical, emotional, that it took to overcome that, you know, everybody thought I would be done in the sport. They really thought it would be all over for me. I did this horrible thing on this very public stage, and I came back to win about 9 months later. And, you know, in hindsight, I think it just took everything out of me. I don't think I had much left after that. And I remember thinking on the very night that I won, it's going to get worse from here. It's just going to go downhill. And I'd never been at the top before. And it wasn't a position, you know, while I celebrated the moment, it was not a position I particularly savored being in, because there's only down from there.
One of the grim aspects to your story involves doctors, especially a Dr. Donald Dixon, who pay less attention to the health of their patients who were young gymnasts than they do to the demands of the coaches who want those gymnasts patched up and competing again. How common is that behavior among physicians who treat gymnasts?
Well, I think in talking with other athletes as well, that many doctors who treat athletes have a different mindset, and their goal becomes to get that athlete back out on the playing field. You know, and with grown football players, you know, this is the case oftentimes, and they play professionally and they're paid to be on the field. The problem is that we were young girls, we were children, and I think the same mindset is applied. Now we're incredibly intent on getting back on the field, in our case, back in the gym, mm-hmm. On the competitive floor, and as are our coaches. And I think, you know, they feel that they're supporting that effort and that dream. And unfortunately, sometimes our physical well-being is actually put aside to support the dream of getting back out on the competition floor. It's exacerbated by the fact that the window of opportunity in gymnastics is so short. It really is a young girl's sport. So missing a season can really mean the end of your career. So, you know, it's all hands on deck to get that girl out there as quickly as you can.
Tell me a little bit about how hard it was to stop competing.
Well, it was incredibly difficult. While I wanted out more than anything towards the end of my career, I was depressed. I'd lost complete touch with the sport. I couldn't even do simple skills that I'd been able to do since I was 8 years old. I was also terrified to leave. I didn't know myself without the sport. I felt not very special without the sport. Many girls stay involved in it as adults, because I think it's hard to leave, you know? It's all you know, and you feel good when you're doing it, and you think you can get that back. But once I walked away, because I wanted to find that kind of passion in something else as an adult.
Do you feel that the best gymnasts today are still going through some of the negative things that you went through?
I don't really follow the sport. You know, it's hard for me to believe that they're not experiencing many of the same things. They're little girls in an incredibly intense environment, surrounded by adults who want something from them. That being said, I wouldn't make any assumptions. It's hard for me to believe. I hope it's different. I think at the highest levels, like I said, in anything, there's just an intensity that can sometimes turn on a child.
Jennifer, do you have any sense of how the gymnastics community, the people whom you once strived to please, feel about this book?
You know, they dispute the depiction. And, I understand there'd be a certain degree of defensiveness. They also say that they've changed many of the practices that I speak about in terms of weigh-ins, et cetera. There were some fairly horrific things that happened in the late 80s and early 90s. One fairly prominent gymnast died of anorexia after having been told, you know, the story goes, by a judge that she was too heavy to succeed in the sport. And that brought some attention to the issue within the sport, and I think the federation and the coaches changed their ways in many regards. I would argue if there's even a scale in the gym, there's too much emphasis on it. None of those girls are fat. But that being said, you know, their position is that they support these girls in achieving their dreams of becoming champions, and I would agree with that. They do, and I just would ask the question, at what cost?
Jennifer Say is the author of Chalked Up, Inside Elite Gymnastics, Merciless Coaching, Overzealous Parents, Eating Disorders, and Elusive Olympic Dreams, published by Morrow. She spoke to me from the studios of KQED in San Francisco. Jennifer, thank you very much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
My conversation with Jennifer Say about her book Chalked Up will be featured on Saturday's program. I'll also be talking to veteran Olympics writer John Powers about the upcoming qualifying trials for U.S. gymnasts hoping to land places on the team that will travel to Beijing. Our NBA analyst Kevin Hench will join me for some conversation about the Lakers-Celtics series and about how worried Commissioner Stern should be about his league's officiating, then and now. In honor of Father's Day, which is Sunday, we'll have a story about a race car driving father who's being outdragged by his race car driving daughter on the funny car circuit. We'll also be bringing you the sounds and celebrations of video gamers breaking records at a classic arcade games tournament in New Hampshire. Remember Frogger? They do. So join us. And remember, you can always listen to the program at onlyagame.org.